From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. At our core, humans are social creatures. It's being together that's helped us not just survive as a species, but thrive. So many of us, however, struggle to stay connected. A recent survey from the American Psychological Association estimates half of U.S. adults say they lack companionship or are isolated from others, at least some of the time. That was part of an annual APA report called Stress in America, and this year its subtitle is A Crisis of Connection. And that takes its toll both on our brains and our bodies. Later in the hour, we'll talk about loneliness and some of the things we can do about it. But first today, what difference does connection make for a population whose health is especially vulnerable, namely older adults? And what can senior citizens do to expand their social networks? Lizette Piedra has looked into some of this for her research. She's a professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in the School of Social Work, as well as Latina and Latino Studies. Lizette, welcome to The 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Emily Harmon. She's a family life educator for the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign, and she works with older adults on making good life choices for healthy living and aging. Emily, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455, especially if you're willing to talk about your experiences with this. If you've ever felt isolated or lonely, what have you done about it? What effect has that had on you? We'd love to hear your stories at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Emily, I'm going to start with you. Basic question. What does healthy aging look like?
I think that's a very individual question. It greatly depends on the person, really. What healthy aging looks like for one person may be different for another. But really, I think generally we can say it's just making those healthy lifestyle choices. And it doesn't have to be running a 5K every year or whatever. It could simply just think about eating good, eating some good nutritious foods, and engaging in physical activity, engaging your mind, trying to challenge your mind with different things, whether it be if you're used to sewing and you're really good at it, try crocheting, just something different to engage your brain in a different way. So just generally just making good lifestyle choices. And it's okay to slip up every once in a while.
Yeah. good point. How does mental health relate to physical health?
Oh, absolutely. I was just talking about it this past week. If you have a fixed mindset, and if a fixed mindset is kind of where it's that negative self-talk, where you're just like, I can't do this. And a positive mindset or an open mindset is more like, I can do this, or I can learn how to do this. So just trying to engage in more of an open mindset instead of that fixed mindset can open the doors for a lot of different things. And it can help with your self-esteem as well. Like I was saying, like if you're trying to engage in more physical activity, for example, you don't have to do the 5K. That's not your end goal. It could be simply just going outside and walking to the next block, or just walking to your mailbox, or when it's cold outside like it is today, just taking a lap around the house or around wherever you're living, just setting those goals that are achievable so it can help your self-esteem and that mental health as well.
All right, Lizette Piedra, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Why does being social matter as much in terms of people getting older as a part of healthy aging?
Well, you can think of social connection as a real core pillar of healthy aging. I mean, we know that in order to age healthy, you need to have good nutrition, you need to be physically active, you need to sleep well. These are all things that contribute to health over the life course. But social connection has emerged as a huge pillar in that. We know that if a person is lonely, if they're socially isolated, their chances of increases to feeling lonely. It raises the risk of depression, cognitive decline, dysfunctional loss, so higher risk of mortality, and that connection is vulnerable, because as people age, their social network is likely to decline or constrict due to things like retirement, bereavement, their health changes. They may be having caregiving responsibilities. And so it's very, the likelihood of your connections, you know, constraining as you get older increases. But there's also a lot of, if you make a conscious effort to stay connected, there's really a lot of benefits that people can get by staying socially connected.
Your research looks at different kinds of social networks that older people have. You have enriched groups and restricted groups. Walk us through that.
Well, when we did our study, I did it with my darling colleague, James Ivanuk, over at NORC at the University of Chicago. And we looked at a huge data set, and we came down to having three network types. One is an enriched one, which is very large, very diverse. Another one is very focused. It's a smaller network. Size-wise, but people seem to be very close to one another. And then the restricted one is a very limited, high incidence of loneliness in this network, poor social resources. And what we found, we tracked to see how did people's networks shift over time, whether did they shift, how did they shift. And what we found is that if someone is in a focused network, that as they got older, or as time went on, they were more likely to shift into an enriched network, which tended to have the lowest rates of loneliness, highest rates of marriage, and just more diverse networks. But that if people landed in a restricted group, they were more likely to get stuck there. They would stay in the restricted group. But what we found was most interesting was that you could move your network, and that a lot of people tended to move into more enriched networks as they aged, which we see as a real silver lining to people. We like to think the older adults become more lonely over time. It's not necessarily true. A lot of people expand their networks over time, get involved with their children, get involved in the community, get involved in hobbies. And I think that is a really important thing that we need to continue to encourage in our society.
Emily Harmon, family life educator at the U of I Extension. What are some of the barriers that older people face in being more involved with their community?
I think Lizette kind of mentioned it, but as you get older, as we all know, because we are all aging, whether we want to admit it or not, it's harder to get around, and it's harder, it's cold outside today, that has an effect on somebody who is older than a child or a middle-aged adult. So there are more sensitive barriers for an older adult, but there are ways to combat that as well, and more non-traditional ways of being socially connected to the technology piece. There's so much research out there about older adults and anybody really utilizing technology to get or stay socially connected. And I think, Lizette, you may have mentioned it in your research or the article that I read about how going, one of the older adults that you interviewed, she goes on a monthly or weekly Zoom call, a video conference with her family just to stay connected. So while there are some barriers, there are some ways to combat those things as well.
Yeah, let me, before I send it back to Lizette, let me mention we asked members of our texting group to write in if they have experience with this. And we heard from Beth in Champaign, who said, technology, i.e. the internet, has helped me a lot, especially during the pandemic. I went looking to connect with people in a fandom, and after some trial and error, have found a group of friends I communicate with daily. I know this is not an option for many folks who are lonely. It is not always easy to navigate technology as an older or cognitively impaired person, but those who blame technology for loneliness ignore its capacity to connect people across geographical barriers. Emily, I gather that you feel there's a lot of wisdom there. Talk about you mentioned the Zoom. What other sorts of technology have people taken up to deal with this?
So Beth, thank you. You are a living example of what we're talking about. I would also say technology can be a barrier if you know nothing about it, if you just know enough to be dangerous, right? So I think the first step would be is just trying out technology, whether it be the texting or the email, whatever it may be. But when we think about technology and preventing social isolation, preventing that feeling of being lonely, it's the texting, the email, phone calls, the Facebook Messenger, online chatting, or we can get way more into it with there's even research out there with virtual reality headsets, those big like glasses things, if you can imagine those, that have shown that people can feel more socially connected in those virtual reality spheres. So very, I think at the lower level, we can think of the basic technologies like the calling, the texting, instant messaging, and then a little bit higher is those virtual reality headsets, and things like that.
Lizette, one of the things that Beth also mentioned in her text message is the pandemic. And I wonder if you still see after effects and how older adults in particular are still dealing with that isolation that so many of us faced during COVID.
The pandemic created a huge, almost a big social shift. And I think that we're still coming out of that, that there's a dawning recognition that as wonderful as technology is, and it helped us overcome quite a bit during the pandemic, it's really a poor substitute for the face-to-face interactions. The human beings are multisensory, and the technology works well in conjunction, but it can't be a substitute for those face-to-face interactions.
I agree with you.
And that is, I think, what people oftentimes lose sight of. They're like, okay, the first thing we're going to turn to is this shiny new thing called the technology. And it's easy. But there's a lot of older adults where they have fine motor skill problems. It's very hard to navigate a phone when your fingers have arthritis or your vision goes, which is very common. And you don't necessarily have contact with peer groups who may or may not be online. There is a way for us to sort of as a society think about the value that comes from even casual interactions. There's a growing literature that talks about the importance of weak links, which is sort of the coffee clutching. You used to go to the coffee and they used to know you and you'd order a coffee. And those brief interactions create a sense of belonging in a community. When you walk down the street and you see somebody walking their dog and you know the name of the dog, those kinds of interactions, are making make a difference for people to feel connected and not feel so lonely. They're not deep and they're not anything monumental, but they are the kinds of things that we have overlooked, especially in the context of the pandemic, how important and how much we lost in that period of time. And I think as we're still kind of getting out of that framework, it requires us that despite the fact that we have this wonderful technology, that we're still human and we require things that are very primitive, like touch and smell, and which is not what technology can necessarily convey very easily.
Do the sort of political divides that people feel deeply in America now also contribute to this idea of lacking or feeling like we don't have that same connection with our fellow humans that we might, you mentioned the dog walking down the street, for
Oh my
example.
God. Even if you go to the store, you go to the store and it's not uncommon to see if the workers have a moment, they're on their phones. So there's a lack of even eye contact that happens for people. You're waiting online and what used to be an opportunity for people to have interactions, they're immersed in their universe of whatever's in that shiny little phone that they're dealing with. And so it hasn't, I think it's had a huge impact on broader society, and in particular for older adults, because they grew up in a generation where that's not, we didn't have access to these phones. These are really new things that have transpired over the last 25 years, 20, 25 years. And so you have a generation of people who came of age in a context that's very different. And so, yes, there is a huge generational divide. Even the use of the QR codes, if you imagine if you were an older adult and you're going to the healthcare center and you're required to use a QR code, you're required to have a cell phone. These are all things that create barriers to access even just basic services if you are a person from a generation that did not use that.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. Our topic for the hour today is loneliness, friendships. We're talking about it in the first part of our program through the lens of some recent research that looks at the friendships that older adults have and the difference that can make in their health. Our guests for this part of the show are Lizette Piedra, an author on that research, and a professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Also with us, Emily Harmon, family life educator for the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign. If you want to join us, we'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. More to come after a break. This is the 21st Show.
Support for the 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Arts Center, presenting Manuel Alvarez Bravo, a pioneer of Mexican photography, featuring collaborators like Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and more. On view through January 18th. More information at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're talking today about loneliness and friendships. In the first part of the hour today, we're talking about that through some recent research that looks at the friendships of older adults and the difference that makes in their health. Two perspectives now. One is a text from Lloyd in Danville who says, I do not in any way feel lonely. At 71, I still hunt, fish, and enjoy live music in and around the Midwest. I'm fortunate to have a spouse as well, he says. But on the flip side of that, Wendella in Rock City says, I'm a 71-year-old woman who's been widowed within the last year after 46 years in a relationship. And I'll just pause to say, my condolences, Wendella. She continues, I believe I do get lonely. I wouldn't say it's chronically lonely, but maybe lonesome is a word. Living in rural northwest Illinois doesn't help because I cannot drive at night, and there's just not much happening here, and I really don't have many friends here. I always find it interesting when I think about how Medicare doesn't pay for things like hearing aids or eyeglasses, which, if I'm not mistaken, are big contributors to older people's loneliness. Loneliness and isolation, she says, comes when you cannot hear people or see things well. Thanks for sharing all that, Wendella. Incidentally, if you want to join our texting group and share your thoughts on future conversations, you can do so by texting the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. Again, just send the word TALK to 217-803-0730. We're joined by Lizette Piedra, an author on the research we've been talking about, and a professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Emily Harmon, family life educator at the University of Illinois Extension. 800-222-9455 to join us live. So, Lizette, we often talk about older adults being set in their ways, right? And yet, according to your research, that's not always the case when it comes to friendships. Talk about that.
Oh, yeah, I would say that's a huge myth. I mean, older adults, there are certain habits and ways of being that probably we all get set in our ways. But I think that there's a huge amount of reason to be optimistic that people can continue to grow and evolve and change. And your first caller is a really great example of that. It's you take on new hobbies, you do new things. We're in an era where it's pretty unprecedented. We've never had a majority of the population live so long. And so as we live, you know, we have a growing number of older adults, and that's becoming increasingly more older adults in our society than young people. What it means to become an older adult is very different than what it meant 40, 50 years ago. And one of the places in which is becoming more and more apparent is that the importance that social connections have, and even intergenerational connections, connections with grandchildren, with younger people, with people throughout, with different people, and even the role of pets, you know, and having connections with other creatures. Having connections seems to make a viable difference for people in terms of their mental health and their physical well-being.
Emily, how do you take this kind of work done by researchers like Lizette and then translate that into something meaningful for the community as you're doing your work?
So Lizette and many other professors and researchers like herself are the living example of the foundation of what we do. So what the research that Lizette is doing, I'm actually sitting here taking notes, hearing her talk. I'm translating that to make it usable for my community members. So Lizette is talking about how basically as people get older, they can become more socially isolated and feel that loneliness. She's doing the research behind it, looking at all of the different people, things, and their habits, the trends. And I am taking that and just trying to make that usable for my community members to say, like, hey, here's some research behind why social isolation is so prevalent with older adults and, I mean, the world in general. And here are some barriers, but here are some things that we can do that you can make the choice that is best for your life to help yourself not feel so lonely or to prevent that social isolation. So the research Lizette does, I am just taking that and just making it usable for our community members so they can be empowered to make the best decision for their life.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. And we have Roy calling from Princeton. Roy, thank you for calling in.
Well, you're welcome. The speakers have touched on it, but I'm also curious about what the connection would be for not just human to human, but human to non-human being. And I heard them mention pets. How does that figure into the dealing with loneliness?
All right. Thank you for the question, Roy. And maybe, Lizette, I'll send that to you first.
Okay, thank you. We need things to take care of, and they get us out of our shells. For those who have dogs, they have to walk them and care for them. And you form a relationship in the same way you form a relationship with another person. You form a relationship with a creature, whether it's a cat or a dog. And it could even be, whatever gets you outside yourself and gives you a sense of being connected to something. Obviously, the more diverse and enriched your social network so that it's not just a pet, but it's, part of a larger constellation of things. That would be better for, that's actually better for us. But I think that the big take-home message is that, we don't outgrow our need for others. If anything, that connection becomes more essential as we age. And that connection, the more diverse it is also very helpful to us.
Go ahead, Emily. You go ahead.
Yeah, I would also like to say that we are actually, that has came up in our research with our needs with our community that Extension works with. People want to learn more about the companionship between adults and pets, or older adults and pets. And one of the things is, Lizette highlighted most of it, but it gives that person a sense of purpose. Just to say, like, oh, I gotta get out of bed to feed Lucy this morning, or we need to go on a walk. So it's that purpose part too, when she said you need to have that diverse network, but having that pet and making sure that you can have the pet, that your home is fit, stable, all the things. But having that pet can give you a sense of purpose.
Lizette, what about artificial intelligence, chatbots? Some people are turning there for companionship now, for better and for worse in some cases. What do you think of that?
I think I've said this before. It's like they're okay substitutes for, if you already have a network and you have already people in your life and you're using a chatbot to kind of fill voids, that's great. If it's the only thing you have, it's probably better than nothing. But remember, we are multisensory. There's one thing to, like somebody and send a message electronically. It's another thing to have someone call you or pay you a visit or go for a walk with someone. You know, we are multisensory, and the aspects of touch and sound and smell is really not what a chat box can replicate, although it is probably better than nothing. We need connection, but we also need diverse connections, you know, and we need to be realistic that we're human, and human beings are multisensory. And so any kind of social connections that are devoid of that, I think, becomes very anemic. It's sort of like the junk food of, you know, connections. It's like it works, you know, if you're starving, you know, it'll give you the calories. But if you really want a healthy, robust, and reap the benefits, you really need something that's diverse and multifaceted.
Lizette Piedra is a professor in social work as well as Latina and Latino studies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Emily Harmon is family life educator with University of Illinois Extension. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you for having us.